This is Audible.
Blackstone Publishing presents Beneath the Shadows by Sarah Foster. This book is read by Lorna Bennett.
For the Curlew Cottage Family.
Chapter 1. They should be home. The thought scratched at Grace's mind as she peered out of a narrow upstairs window. The sun had long since been banished behind a blanket of thick grey cloud. In front of her, the wild moorland rolled away to be absorbed by the gloom of twilight. Grace turned and trailed through the cottage, flicking at wall switches, shaking the shadows from their slumbers and driving them out. She moved as though in a trance, the surroundings still surreal to her, although it had been over a week since they had moved in. The upstairs corridor was pokey, and the ceiling so low that she had spent the last few days watching Adam stooping under the beams. The staircase was steep, the wood beneath the carpet uneven, so it was better to tread on the outer edges of each step rather than stumble into the indentations of myriad footsteps gone before. She made her careful way downstairs, through the small living room that was littered with packing boxes, and headed into the kitchen, moving again to a window, unable to stop herself from looking out across the sloping moors towards the distant road that wound in and out of sight. A few trees were silhouetted on the horizon, their brittle skeletons bent from regular lashings by the coastal winds. The view before her was utterly still. She took a deep breath, trying to quell the worry that was winding her nerves into knots. Adam's note had unsettled her.
"Won't be long. I have to talk to you when I get back. Don't go anywhere. A. X."
Back in the lounge, Grace threw herself into an armchair, one hand brushing over the raked leather where a long-dead cat had once regularly sharpened its claws. She looked around the cottage. Their cottage. Though it was nearly impossible to think of it that way.
"It's an incredible gift,"
she could still hear Adam enthusing, over and over, when they had first found out his grandparents had bequeathed Hawthorne Cottage to him.
"It's like fate is giving us a bloody great shove in the back. Our own place, no mortgage, away from the rat race, a chance for Millie to start life among nature, rather than believing that trees grow through cracks in the paving. Come on, Gracie. Let's give it a go."
At that point, Grace had been overwhelmed by pads and pumps and nappies and had somehow found herself agreeing with every point he made. Adam was right. Who wanted red-top buses flying past their London flat at all hours? Noise, lights, people everywhere? This way, they could escape their financial pressures for a while. She didn't want to leave Millie while she was tiny and go back to her marketing job with its meagre wage and demanding retail clients. It wasn't her vocation, and to satisfy her demanding boss, she often had to stay long after office hours were over. They couldn't avoid the fact that their priorities were changing. Adam and Grace had begun their relationship to a backdrop of fine restaurants and raucous weekends away with friends. Now, in their 30s, most people they knew had children, their social life had dwindled, and they wouldn't be the first ones to make the move out of the city. Grace began to imagine the possibilities that the cottage in North Yorkshire would present. The chance to cook proper meals for a change, taking Millie for long country walks in the fresh air, and snuggling up to Adam in the evenings. She wouldn't have to give up anything either. She could take the maximum maternity leave she was allowed while they gave it a try. To top it off, they'd be free of the extortionate repayments on their tiny two-bedroom flat, so instead of struggling, they might even save. And, as Adam said, if it didn't work out, they would simply come back.
6 months, she'd agreed. "We'll try it for 6 months, see how we go."
But as they packed their belongings and the moving date drew nearer, something had begun to niggle at her. She couldn't put her finger on what it was that woke her in the early hours,
well before the baby stirred. Eventually, she had dismissed it as understandable nerves at such a big change. And yet, the nagging voice refused to quieten. Now she picked at the torn leather on the armchair as she thought about their first few days in the cottage. The unsettling silence as she had unpacked boxes, the stillness each time she looked out the window, the black descent of night, and the relentless ticking and chiming of the grandfather clock in the hall. As she sat there, it was hard to imagine the throngs of people and traffic swirling around central London, an endlessly shifting kaleidoscope of colour and movement. The last week at the cottage had felt like the longest of Grace's life. The 6 months she had promised Adam now lay interminably before them. She looked at her watch. Where the hell were they? Adam's car was out the front, so they couldn't have gone far. Just the thought of the two of them made her heart quicken. Since Millie had been born, her emotions seemed to bubble fierce and strange beneath her skin, threatening to spill over at any moment. Her mobile rang, and she fumbled around for it among the packing debris, snatching at it before it stopped.
Gracie?
Annabelle, she sighed, sitting back down.
You could at least pretend to be pleased to hear from me, her sister grumbled. Or have you forgotten about me already, now you've moved to Timbuktu?
Sorry, Belle. I'm getting a bit worried about Adam and Millie. They've been out since I got back from town. They should be back by now. Annabelle laughed.
Grace, you're such a worrywart. Adam's probably chatting over a fence post somewhere. You know he has to show Millie off to everyone. Stop panicking. Now, tell me when you're coming back. You can't become a country bumpkin forever. I miss you too much.
Grace smiled at that. You still can't believe that I've moved away, can you? Come and see us, Belle. You never know, you might like it here.
So you're planning on staying then?
Yes, Grace said, as emphatically as she could manage. She had never felt the need to pretend to Annabelle before, but she was determined to give this move a chance. In truth, she missed her sister terribly, knew the feeling was mutual, and was afraid that Annabelle would exploit any opportunity she saw to encourage them back to London.
Grace, are you listening to me?
Sorry, what were you saying? Grace replied, tuning back into the voice on the other end of the line.
I was asking you to tell me just what Yorkshire has that London doesn't.
Well, fresh air for a start.
And you can move without someone knocking you over and then swearing at you. Okay.
Annabelle acquiesced.
Well, at least I don't have to see you and Adam wandering around with soppy grins on your faces quite so often. It can get pretty sickening after a while, you know.
Grace ignored the jibe.
Come for a visit, Belle. We've got a pub. I guess I might have to if you won't come back. London misses you, though. I miss you.
You shouldn't have helped me pack everything up, then.
I know. I'm my own worst enemy.
Grace smiled again distractedly as Annabelle chattered away, getting up to gaze once more through the kitchen window. All was quiet. She walked slowly to the front of the cottage and glanced out into the dusky garden. There was a dark shape on her doorstep. She couldn't quite see it at this angle or make out much in the shadows. She frowned, listening to Annabelle reporting on her week as she headed to the front door. Once there, she twisted the key in the lock, pulled it open, and stopped in shock. In front of her was Millie's pram. She peered inside to find her 10-week-old daughter fast asleep, her cheeks rosy and cold, her tiny chest rising and falling steadily underneath the tightly tucked woolen coverlet. Grace ran her fingers gently over her daughter's forehead, then glanced around and said, "Adam?" No one answered. She waited, watching her short breaths bursting into the frosty night air. She called a little louder.
"Adam, where are you?"
Silence.
Then she heard a small voice saying,
Grace? Grace?
She looked down absently at the phone in her hand. She lifted it up to hear Annabelle's voice, alarmed.
Grace, what's going on?
I just found Millie asleep in her pram on the front doorstep, Grace said, her confusion growing with every word.
So they're back then. See, I told you it would be fine.
Grace stared out into the deepening darkness. I'm not sure, Annabelle. It's only Millie here. There's no sign of Adam.
He must be caught up with something. He'll be there in a second, I'm sure,
Annabelle reassured her. But he wasn't. Chapter 2. 12 months later. It waited in the shadows, golden orbs for eyes that burned with hellfire. A continuous low growl hummed in her ears. And then came the snarl and a frenzied flash of fangs. When she heard the scream, Grace came to with a start. The noise weakened to a wail, a high-pitched cry that sent a shudder through her. She checked the clock, 3 a.m., then flung back the bedclothes, jumped up, and rushed into the small room next door, swatting the landing light switch as she went, rubbing sleep from her eyes. Millie stood holding the crib bars with one hand, the other clutching Mr. Pink, the small teddy bear Adam had brought to the hospital after she was born. Her eyes were squeezed tight, lashes glistening with unshed tears, while her fine brown hair had risen up in a defiance of curls. She had already worked herself into an exhaustion of gulping sobs and whimpers, and Grace went swiftly towards her and gathered her up into the safety of her arms. Millie huddled against her mother's breasts, her wet nose and mouth dampening Grace's nightshirt. You're safe now. Mummy's here, Grace whispered as she rocked her daughter gently, chanting the words over and over, whether to Millie or to herself, she wasn't sure. It was just a nightmare. Soon Millie began to quiet, and as her breathing slowed, so did Grace's racing heart. While she cradled her child tightly, she tried to push away her thoughts, but it was no use. She feared it had been a mistake to come back. They had driven to the village that morning, through the sodden November countryside, their car sloshing along the winding roads, while Grace's reasons for returning became more and more muddied. But through the endless days and restless nights of the last 12 months, she had been sure of one thing. She would come back. The shock of Adam's disappearance had finally begun to fade, but Grace's yearning for answers had not. She had come to realize that if she had any hope of discovering what had happened, she needed to begin retracing her husband's steps in the place where it had all gone so horribly wrong. It had taken much longer to reach the village than she remembered. Eventually, they had crossed a cattle grid at the bottom of a steep hill, then listened to the car's protesting whine as it climbed up the bank in second gear. As they reached the bare brown moor top, Grace's memories began to unfold. The back of her neck prickled as the hill plateaued out and took them gently downwards, and the sensation moved to her throat as she saw the village sign, Roseby, set into a jagged piece of stone. Then the road dipped abruptly, revealing first of all a brick house, then a neat sloping row of terraced cottages. She drove until she reached the last one, halfway down the hill, then pulled onto the grass in front of a low stone wall and switched off the engine. 1 year ago, Adam had been here with them, parking a large removals van ahead of their car. Grace remembered catching his eye through the windshield, his grin as he came across to unbuckle Millie from her seat, and the way he had cradled his tiny daughter close, pointing at the cottage and telling her, "We're home." Now, Grace's hand shook as she pulled the keys from the ignition. She peered over into the back seat, murmuring to her sleeping child, "We're here." Millie had been reluctant to wake, her head drooping against her mother's chest as Grace struggled with a stiff front door lock, eager to escape the icy wind. Once inside, warmth hit them, taking Grace by surprise. She moved through the small entranceway into the lounge. There was a note on the coffee table. "Have left a few things in the fridge for you, Meredith." Looking around, Grace was touched. Even in this scant neighborhood of half a dozen buildings, she'd had little opportunity to get to know the neighbors. Meredith lived in the grandiose house, only a short walk from Hawthorne Cottage. But the first time they had met, Grace had been dazed. Police had been bustling in and out, while she stared in bewilderment at Adam's dirty mug on the benchtop, his jacket slung over the kitchen chair, his toolbox left open on the work table. Meredith had volunteered to help and made cups of tea for everyone, but Grace would have barely remembered her if she hadn't turned up again a week or so later. This time it was Grace's mother who made Meredith tea, explained that they were taking Grace home with them, and accepted her kind offer of looking after the cottage until Grace decided what to do next. However, Meredith had gone above and beyond what Grace was expecting. There was no air of neglect to the place. The surfaces were freshly dusted, the radiators were warm, while the air smelled faintly of lavender. It took the edge off Grace's apprehension, and she was overcome with gratitude. She had put Millie down on the floor with a drink. Then she had walked into the kitchen to find it waiting neat and expectant before heading back through the living room and into the hall, climbing the stairs, tiptoeing like a trespasser. Her emotions had finally caught up with her as she took her first tentative look in the main bedroom. There was the bed. Their bed. Made up neatly. She had gone across, turned back the covers, and pressed her face into the pillow on Adam's side. But all she could smell was clean linen. She stood and gently shushed Millie in her arms, using the soft glow of the landing light to watch as Millie slowly succumbed to sleep. After a while, she carefully laid her little girl back down and returned to her own room. A loud, insistent ticking kept pace with her footsteps. She had forgotten about the damn grandfather clock. The last time she had been here, the ticking and chiming had begun to drive her crazy, though Adam had reassured her that she would get used to it. "It's been with the family for generations. It's got to be valuable," he'd said, opening the oak casing at the front and beginning to wind it. "My grandfather used to call it the heartbeat of the cottage." Now Grace attempted to ignore it as she lay under the covers and tried to drift off. But suddenly, her eyelids were aglow, and the deep crackle of tires outside made her jump. She padded out of bed again and eased one curtain back a little, resting her hand on the cool window pane. A black Land Rover was parked a short distance up the sloping lane, just visible by the faint moonlight that cut through the clouds. It had stopped outside the red brick house that crested the hill. The Land Rover's headlights were now off, and the interior light was on. But Grace was too far away to see anything more than a moving shadow inside. The light disappeared. The driver climbed out into a darkness her vision could not penetrate. She heard the slight creaking of a gate, and then all was silent. She could feel her heart thudding beneath her nightgown, but tried to calm herself, realizing how silly she was being. It was perfectly reasonable for people to arrive home in the middle of the night. She had to stop letting her imagination play games with her. Grace settled back into bed again, but sleep wanted nothing to do with her now. She remembered the first night she'd ever spent here, when Adam had pulled her to him and wrapped her tight within his arms. He had been wearing a thick sweater. In fact, they'd both been only semi-dressed, having under-anticipated the biting cold of the northern winter. She could still feel the fleece soft against her skin, warming the cheek that had lain against it, while the rest of her face stung with cold. "I'm scared too," he'd said, holding her close. "But I know we've done the right thing, Grace. I promise it will be all right." Grace remembered how she had relaxed at his words, so much so that she had slept soon after. But a week later, he had gone out and never come home. Now, she did her best to ignore the empty space next to her and wrapped her arms around a pillow, trying to pretend she could bring Adam back for a moment, make believe that he'd kept his promise after all. But sleep kept its distance. She tossed and turned for a while in an effort to get comfortable. Then her eyes flew open as the silence was shredded by a jarring screech. "It's a bird," she told herself, pushing away the image of some tormented ghost out there in the black moor of night. Shuddering, she switched on the bedside lamp and cast a glance around the room, at the old furniture, the sepia photo of Adam's grandparents on their wedding day that hung above her half-unpacked case. Then she remembered the small bookshelf on the landing. She threw back the covers and tiptoed across the carpet, hoping she wouldn't wake Millie. The bookshelf was right outside her door, barely visible in the light cast by the bedside lamp, but she could just make out the spines on the top shelf. They were all classics: Wuthering Heights, The Turn of the Screw, Jane Eyre, Great Expectations. She'd read a few of them at school. Then her eye fell on a book she had always wanted to read, but never got to: Rebecca. She plucked the tattered copy from among the others and took it back to bed with her. She pulled the covers over her, opened it, and read the first few lines of a long-ago dream. And soon, her grip loosened on the book, her eyes closed, and she found herself lost amid thick overgrowth, gazing towards the mullioned windows of a dark, abandoned house. Chapter 3. When Grace woke again, it was to silence. Light had begun to seep through the curtains and saturate the darkness as the day broke. She was grateful, in fact, strangely exhilarated, to have got through the first night alone in the cottage and felt full of energy for the day ahead. She intended to begin going through the contents of the cottage, quickly and meticulously, packing up while searching for anything that might explain the mystery of Adam's disappearance. She was anxious to get started. She had a chance to have a bath before she even heard Millie stir, then went to get her little girl. Millie was sitting up, playing in her cot, and Grace observed her for a moment without being noticed. Millie was nearly 15 months old, on the verge of walking, almost unrecognizable from the tiny bundle that Grace and Adam had first brought to the cottage. Adam had missed all the changes, big and small, that had happened over the past year. Grace closed her eyes briefly, and when she opened them again, Millie was holding out her arms, saving Grace from her daydream. Grace was relieved to see that whatever had terrorized Millie in the night seemed to have been absorbed by the morning's light. "We have a visitor coming today," she told her daughter, smiling at her reassuringly, hoping Millie would smile back. Instead, Millie reached out to touch her mother's mouth, watching her intently all the while, as though checking she was real. After breakfast, Grace unpacked the rest of their luggage, while Millie played by her feet. She put away all her clothes, except her jeans and thickest sweaters, looking longingly at a pair of high-heeled brown suede boots that she'd worn all the time in London. They were consigned to the bottom of the wardrobe, behind the trainers and Wellingtons, which were all she needed right now. When they'd returned to the living room, Grace scanned the area and, Satisfied there was nothing too dangerous within reach of little hands, set Millie on the floor to play. Then she picked up the phone and called her parents in France. Her father answered and sounded pleased to hear from her, even if there was a note of concern in his voice. She recalled their last conversation a few days earlier, before she had left for England.
"What the hell do you want to go and live there again for?"
he'd roared when she'd announced her plans. "It's only for a short time," Grace had replied. "There are things to sort out, and I think it's time I went and did it. I can't stay here forever."
"You can stay here for as long as you like,"
her dad had replied, his voice gruff and indignant.
"You can't fool me, Grace. I know why you're going."
Grace bridled at her father's intimation of the truth. She didn't want to discuss Adam or her overwhelming need for answers. "I need to pack up the cottage properly, Dad. There's nobody else to do that job except me. And it's Millie's inheritance, remember? Everything there is part of her family history." Her father made a noise that sounded like, "Hmm," and walked over to the living room window, from where, if you looked between the huddled villas opposite, you could glimpse a patch of sparkling blue sea. Then he turned and glared at her.
"I'm sure we could find someone there to do that for you."
Grace had folded her arms, stood her ground and waited, until her father added, shaking a finger at her,
"Just don't you go chasing shadows, you hear me? Get in, do what you need to, and then go somewhere else, somewhere far away. Your mother and I have no idea why Adam took you there in the first place."
She'd gone across to him and put her hand on his arm. "I'll be fine," she said softly. He hadn't met her eyes, simply patted her hand and said,
"I know you will."
She and Millie had left the next day. Now, she was glad to hear their voices, though this time it was her mother who couldn't hide her worry completely.
"Remember to take any legal documents you find to a lawyer. You need to know where you stand. Your father and I will pay for it."
"I have enough money," Grace replied, although she was secretly alarmed at how rapidly her ample savings, the proceeds from the sale of their London flat, were vanishing.
"Besides, we know where I stand," she added miserably. "The cottage is in joint names, so I can't sell without Adam."
"But there might be a way round it, Grace. You never know. Just get someone local to check out all the facts for you."
"I will, Mum," Grace replied, pulling an exasperated face at Millie. "I've only been here a day. Give me a chance."
"I know, love. We only want to help. Oh, and before I go, James called. He was surprised to hear you'd gone back there. Said you hadn't mentioned it."
Grace was riled by her tone. "I didn't realize I had to report all my movements to him," she shot back. Grace and James had been best mates since university, but their relationship had been somewhat strained over the last few years, ever since James had decided not to attend Grace and Adam's wedding. There was silence on the other end of the line, and Grace immediately felt bad. After all, there was only one reason she hadn't told James she was coming back. She didn't want to listen to him trying to talk her out of it.
"Sorry, Mum. I didn't mean to snap."
"It's okay, love. I understand. Just remember you can call us any time, Grace, day or night."
"I know again."
As Grace said goodbye, a wave of nerves threatened to swamp her. The phone call had made her all too aware of the distance between her and those who had bolstered her up over the past year. She shook off her apprehension as she surveyed the living room. Adam's grandparents had been dead for over 18 months, yet as far as the cottage was concerned, they could just be out shopping. The fact that the place creaked and groaned unaccountably might well have been due to the weight of everything inside it. A lifetime spent gathering, Grace thought, looking at the books stacked against the walls, magazines piled in corners, the collection of china bird ornaments that crowded together in the low glass cabinet. It was a long shot that any of these odds and ends would prove revelatory, but she didn't want to overlook them. Just in case there was a note propped behind a statuette or a letter misplaced under a magazine that would explain everything. She began collecting the animal figurines on top of the mantelpiece, almost knocking over an enormous hand-painted vase, which she caught just before it toppled against a brass lamp with a glass shade. In the scramble, a wooden box dropped to the floor, falling open to reveal a pipe and a pouch of tobacco inside. The sudden smell brought back the memories of Grace's own grandfather, and the past flew into the present for just a second, disappearing as quickly as it came, leaving a bittersweet sense of longing. She put the box back on the shelf and sighed, a new sense of responsibility dawning on her. Although she was a relative stranger to the old couple, she was now responsible for dismantling the last traces of their lives. She wished she had more idea of what Adam might have wanted, but they had only had a week together in the cottage before everything fell apart. In those few days, she'd noticed that Adam spent most of his time working on odd jobs, putting off anything sentimental. It was clear he was finding it daunting. While he'd been fond of his grandparents, he'd had limited contact with them for most of his life, except for a brief spell when he'd stayed with them for a few months after his mother died. Yet their funerals, so close together, had hit him hard. With their passing, he had lost the last family he had. Grace had only visited the cottage once while Adam's grandparents had been alive. She had instinctively liked them, but they hadn't had enough time to move past polite friendliness. The only other occasion they had met had been at Grace and Adam's wedding, which had gone by in a blur of excitement for Grace. But she did remember them, inseparable, looking a little nervous and pale on a rare trip to the south, the subdued black and burgundy hues of their Sunday best in stark contrast to Grace's suntanned parents, her father in his morning suit, and her mother's dress of pink and white swirls, topped off by a fascinator that sprouted a large fan of pink feathers from one side of her head. However, Bill and Constance Lockwood had smiled proudly at anyone who caught their eye that day, particularly their grandson. A year later, Bill had been taken into hospital, soon after his wife had been found dead at home. The stress and grief meant the old man had never returned. When Grace and Adam had first arrived, there had been a magazine on the coffee table, open to a short story. Adam had looked at it in silence for a moment, then told Grace that he remembered seeing his grandmother reading the stories aloud to his grandfather. He'd closed it and gone across to the bin, then hesitated and put it on a bookshelf instead. Grace looked over towards the shelf and saw the magazine straight away, exactly where Adam had left it. She bit her lip and put her hands on her hips as Millie began pushing clothespins underneath the sofa. She barely knew where or how to begin. "One step at a time," she said to herself. "Just make a start, that's all." She had been putting the kettle on when she heard a knock on the door. Their visitor was 5 minutes early.
"Michael Muir," said the young blonde man waiting outside. "Call me Mike."
He couldn't have been more than 30, but he had the portly bearing of a man much older, and ruddy cheeks to match. He stuck out a plump hand, which Grace shook obligingly before stepping back so he could come in. Grace looked on as he began assessing the small entrance hall.
"Living room this way?"
he asked, moving off on her nod.
"I'll take a good look round, shall I?"
he added over his shoulder as she followed. Then he began to make notes on a pad as he headed towards the kitchen. Grace let him get on with his assessment while she warmed up Millie's morning milk and prepared her cereal. She was encouraging Millie to eat when Mike Muir reappeared.
"Can we go through this now?"
he asked, waving his pad. She indicated the vacant chair across from her at the tiny dining table that had been squeezed into the space. Mike Muir contorted his ample frame to fit, sat down, and put his notes on the tabletop.
Right then. You say you're looking at renting rather than selling?
Yes, Grace said. For the time being.
And you're getting rid of the furniture?
Well, I could do, but I don't have to. Mike Muir looked down at his pad.
Well, I can certainly put a rental advert out for you, see how we get on. However, can I give you some advice?
He looked at her hopefully. Go ahead.
Well, as it stands, the place is a bit, how shall I put it?
You can say neglected, she replied, smiling.
Aye,
he agreed uncomfortably, his ruddy cheeks darkening to become burgundy splotches.
However, if you made a few renovations, instead of looking at long-term tenants, which might cause you some bother out here, you could think about letting it out as a holiday rental instead. We look after a property for a family in the next village who've done something similar, and they're making an absolute killing. It's got to be at least double what you'd get for a long-term rental, all said and done.
Really? Grace felt her mood rising. So what do I need to do? Mike Muir appeared delighted by her enthusiasm.
Well, country getaways like these are quite sought after. But to be canny about it, you need to set it up properly. Keep the best bits of a traditional cottage, your log fires, your wooden beams and so on, but surround it with modern appliances and some nice furnishings, and you're on to a winner. See, if you took out this wall,
he knocked his knuckles on the wall next to them,
make it open plan down here, you've got a much bigger area. Right now it's too cramped. Put new cupboards in here and redo the living room fireplace so it's a bit of a feature. There's not too much you can do about upstairs, but you could upgrade windows, make the bathroom ensuite, that kind of thing. You could do a miracle makeover on this place, and it'll be cosy and trendy rather than...
His face coloured up again. Claustrophobic and drab? Grace finished for him.
Aye,
he beamed at her, seeming pleased at how easy this was proving.
And if you do decide to sell down the road, you'll get much more if you've done some work on the place already.
Grace liked the sound of his suggestions. She was turning things over in her mind when he began to get up.
Look, take my card and give me a call when you've decided what to do next.
Thanks. Grace ran a finger over the embossed lettering, her mind swirling with possibilities. You've been great. I'll think it over and let you know. She went to see him out, leaving Millie in her high chair banging her spoon repeatedly against her Weetabix with a dull thwack. At the door, Mike turned and the colour was high in his cheeks again.
I remember your Adam, he said. He played for Skeldale cricket team for a time. He was a cracking spin bowler. I was right sorry.
Thanks, Grace cut in, her discomfort as acute as his. A swift swoop of memories threatening to betray her composure. I'll be in touch, she added hastily, then closed the door. But not before she caught one last sight of Mike Muir's forlorn face looking back at her from the doorstep. Chapter 4. There was only one shop in Skeldale, one of the small villages between Roseby and the coast. It was just a terraced house, really, no different to its dozen or so neighbours on the narrow lane, except for the sign outside, and notices tacked against the glass of the bay windows. No one else was in sight as Grace hovered in the doorway, casting her eye along the advertisements. She couldn't see what she was searching for. A cowbell clanged loudly as she pushed open the heavy wooden door. Inside, it was dingy, the scant space crammed with paraphernalia. Boxes of fruit lined the shelves to one side of her, precarious towers of tins stacked in the gaps. On the other side, An eclectic mix of items were piled in disordered groups, among them stationery, candles, postcards, and noodle packets. More boxes spilled their assorted contents onto the uneven stone-flagged floor, and in one corner stood what looked like a group of witches' broomsticks. Grace peered into some plastic pots as she went past to see they contained honeycombs, oozing golden liquid from their tiny pores. The countertop was almost hidden by boxes of sweets, and Millie reached out. Grace pulled her away as an old woman shuffled into view from a door behind the counter. Her dress strained against its seams, and the loose skin hanging in folds under her chin quivered as she swayed towards the desk.
"Now then, lass, what can I do for you?"
she rasped. The shop certainly hadn't been organised with children in mind, and almost everything was within Millie's grasp. The little girl leaned backwards and grabbed a box of matches, which Grace extricated from her and returned to the shelf. The woman watched them impassively. "I'm after some milk?" Grace asked, unable to see a fridge anywhere. The shopkeeper pulled a thick grey cardigan tighter around her and disappeared through the doorway again. Grace struggled to keep Millie's eager fingers away from everything until the woman reappeared, a small carton of full cream milk in one swollen hand. As she placed it on the counter, Grace wondered about asking for semi-skimmed, but decided it was simplest to hand over a £5 note. The shopkeeper took it, rummaged in a drawer behind her desk, and brought out some change. As she held out the coins, the cowbell chimed again, and the woman glanced over Grace's shoulder. Grace thought she saw recognition in her eyes, suspicion even, but the shopkeeper said nothing. Grace turned to leave, reminding herself to stock up during her trips to town so she didn't have to come here too often. As she moved, the man behind her stepped aside to let her pass, and Grace looked up briefly in thanks, registering a face similar in age to her own. She was about to open the door when she remembered her other reason for venturing out. She doubted the woman would be of much help, but since she was here, she might as well ask anyway. "Excuse me, but I'm thinking about doing some renovations on my cottage. Do you know anyone local who might be interested in that kind of work?" The shopkeeper considered her, until Grace thought that the very question must have been some kind of faux pas around these parts. But apparently she was deep in thought, as after an extended silence she said,
"Can't think of anyone offhand like, but I'll put word out. Where's thou at?"
"Roseby," Grace replied after a beat, struggling to decipher the woman's thick accent. It was as though a key had unlocked the woman's demeanour. Her whole body trembled into alertness as she straightened, and she broke into a grin.
"Roseby, are you now? In Hawthorne Cottage for a guess."
Grace's heart sank, sure that Adam's name was about to come up again. But, thankfully, the woman kept to the subject at hand.
"Well, like I say, I'll put word out for you."
"Thank you," Grace smiled courteously. "Shall I give you my number?"
"Don't bother. If I thinks of anyone, I'll send them round. You do right getting on with it before the snow comes."
"Okay, thanks." Grace turned to discover the man behind her was studying her. "Excuse me," she said, discomforted by his scrutiny. He said nothing, but pulled the door open for her, the bell jangling again at her exit. There was a low stone wall in front of the shop, and a large black dog lay on the ground in front of it, impervious to the cold, wet pavement. The dog had been resting its head on its paws, but at the sound of Grace's footsteps, its ears twitched and its head swung around, two coal-black eyes regarding her solemnly. Grace usually loved dogs, but this one troubled her, reminding her too much of the black hound of her recent nightmare. Before she could move on, the dog sprang to its feet in excitement and began to nose around her legs, then jumped up to try to sniff Millie's shoes. Grace expected Millie to squirm and turn away, but instead, She bent over to peer curiously down at the creature. Grace was trying to ward off the dog with one hand, hissing, "No, down," when she heard the cowbell ring again.
"Bess, away,"
came a stern male command, and the dog instantly obeyed. Grace took a deep breath, and in an attempt to recompose herself as the man from the shop bent over, picked up the dog's leash, then straightened up. He was tall and lean, with features that were chiseled to the point of hollowed. Grace was sure she had never seen him before in her life, but at the same time, there was something slightly familiar about him. As their eyes locked, the intensity of his stare left her unsteady for a moment, and she took a small step backwards to regain her balance. His eyes were a deep brown, a few tired lines cutting thin grooves from each corner before they were absorbed into the paleness of his face. He ran a hand over his short dark hair.
"You're looking for a handyman?"
Grace almost started. His voice was surprisingly soft and low, with just a hint of a northern accent, a similar cadence to Adam's.
"I've done quite a bit of that kind of work," he continued. "I might be interested in the job."
"Okay," Grace replied, thinking fast. He had taken her by surprise, but this was too good an opportunity to pass up. "Well then, if you're free on Sunday, perhaps you could come over and I'll show you what I'm thinking of, and we can have a chat about it. I'm open to suggestions, to be honest."
"Great,"
he replied, though his expression remained serious.
"What time?"
"Around one," she asked. "Millie takes a nap then," she indicated her daughter, who had begun to squirm in her arms. "So we'll have a proper chance to talk."
"Fine. I'm Ben, by the way."
He held out a hand. "Grace." She met his grasp, finding his skin warm despite the chill of the morning. "Do you have a number I can call you on if I need to change the time?"
"Sure."
He watched as she got out her mobile phone, then pulled his own from his pocket.
"What's your number?"
he asked. As she reeled it off, he dialed it, and the little screen on Grace's phone lit up.
"There you go,"
he said. She stored the number. "Thanks."
"See you on Sunday then."
He began to turn away. "I haven't told you that I'm at Hawthorne Cottage, in Roseby," she said quickly.
"So I heard,"
he answered, gesturing to the shop.
"I know where Hawthorne Cottage is. I'll see you then."
He set off down the lane, the dog trotting behind him. Grace watched them walk away until they reached a battered black Land Rover. The dog jumped in next to its owner, and moments later the vehicle roared by, the rise and fall of the road soon taking it out of sight. The return trip to Roseby took about 15 minutes. Grace drove cautiously along the empty road, the deserted moors spreading out on either side. Approaching the village from this direction, the journey was a stark contrast to the country lanes they had driven on yesterday. Then, at least there had been trees and patches of grass and the occasional farmhouse. But here on the moortop, it was flat, brown, and barren. She glanced behind her as she neared the crest of the hill that would take them down into the village. Millie had fallen asleep in her seat, her head lolling awkwardly against her chest. Taking the opportunity of a moment to herself, Grace pulled over to the side of the road and switched off the engine. She looked out across the wild expanse and tried to breathe it in, allow her mind to stop, flex itself, and unfurl, rather than chase itself in ever-decreasing circles full of unbidden thoughts. And yet, she found herself back 12 months, sitting in the cottage, answering endless questions about Adam, probing questions designed to find some explanation of his mental health or his circumstances that might have led him to make an abrupt departure from his life. She told them everything. She had nothing to hide. He was happy to have moved here. He was starting work as a supply teacher the following week. He knew the area, yes, from visits to his grandparents and an extended stay here in his teens after his mother died. But he hadn't lived here for almost 15 years. "But had he ever wandered off before?" they'd persisted. "Did he have any history of mental illness, depression?" She had tried to explain Adam to them, that he often sang loudly and out of tune in the shower, that he was fanatical about cricket, that he could quote his favourite Tarantino movies verbatim, that he was always the one offering support to troubled friends, never the one in crisis himself. But whatever she said, the questions kept on coming. And when they found out he had no family left alive to speak of, their doubts had intensified. The night Adam had gone, Grace had been surrounded by strangers, police mostly, along with a few locals like Meredith who wanted to help out. Her parents were on their way from France, but wouldn't arrive until the next day. Annabelle was getting hold of a car and would be there as soon as she could, but had a 5-hour road trip from London ahead of her. There had been a sudden flare of hope that they might be able to find Adam via his mobile signal, until she told them that she had already tried the number and had found the phone ringing in the pocket of Millie's pram. When her interrogation had finally ended, Grace had briefly gone out into the pitch black night and stood with Millie held tight in her arms, surrounded by strobing torchlights, listening to Adam's name echoing away through different voices, praying that one of them would hear a response. But each call was carried off on the bitter wind, to be met with silence. Later, she had watched as the search parties returned, shoulders slack, heads bowed. Nothing had explained why Millie had been left alone on the doorstep with no sign of her daddy. Not then, and not since. Grace's mother and father had arrived 24 hours later, pulling their daughter into their arms and letting her sob her helplessness out on them. Grace had seen the horror and confusion on their faces as they watched the police coming in and out of the cottage. But with her family there, Grace had at least felt anchored to the world again. Her parents had stayed by her side throughout the ensuing fortnight as she faced the media, asking for information, then waited for answers that never came. They had helped her search for Adam's passport when the police requested it. To Grace's alarm, none of them could find it. But the police had put out an alert, and there was no record of it being used. Adam wouldn't leave Millie like that. Grace knew it. But after the police had combed the area looking for him and found nothing, they began to suggest he might have run away.
"It wouldn't be the first time," they said. "New fathers sometimes couldn't cope with the responsibility, and he'd withdrawn £1,000 from their account the day before he vanished."
Grace knew about the money. Adam had said he intended to keep it at the cottage because they were so isolated. Yet she had never found it. The police thought he might have used the cash to disappear. He'd left the baby where he was sure she'd be found and simply walked away. But Grace had so many questions. Why not leave Millie in the cottage? Why go without telling her, cutting off all contact? And if he was ready to vanish into the night, then why on earth would he have moved Grace all the way out into the country before he did so? Not to mention the fact that her last memory of Adam, before she left for the shops, was of him sitting on the floor in front of the television, half paying attention to a morning chat show, his legs crossed and his baby girl cradled within them, her mouth clamped around a bottle. He had appeared so relaxed as he tilted his head up to kiss his wife goodbye. He'd said, "Go on, enjoy the break. We'll be fine." No, she knew her husband better than anyone, and the last time she had seen him, he had not been a man about to turn his back on the life he appeared to love. And yet, as Christmas had drawn closer, with no news, Grace's parents had grown more eager to leave every day. They had insisted upon taking Grace and Millie too. Under no circumstances would they leave them by themselves in such a remote part of the world, the antithesis of their beloved, bright and sunny south of France. At the time, Grace had been too upset to do anything but acquiesce, and she was thankful for their steady guiding hands over the last 12 months. But now she needed to take control. She wanted answers. She couldn't let the insidious suggestion that she was just another duped, discarded wife sneak any further beneath her skin. Because, occasionally, she found herself picturing Adam in an exotic location, laughing, his arm around another woman, with Grace and Millie filed away in some blank, unwanted corner of his mind. She would find herself clenching her fists while forcing those images away, their slow dispersal leaving her shaken. She wouldn't let those beliefs take hold. She didn't want the doubts or the helplessness that coupled them to outlast her faith in her husband and their life together. The only way to rid herself of them was to uncover the truth. Grace jumped as a car flew past, shattering the silence. Her reverie was broken. The moors lay in front of her, bleak and brown under a heavy grey sky. "Stop letting your memories run riot," she chided herself. "Just keep busy. Get things done." She needed distraction and was glad that Annabelle was coming up this weekend under the pretext of helping out, even though she knew Annabelle was likely to prove useless on that score. She started the engine again. Halfway down the steep hill that led into the village, they passed an imposing two-story stone house, perched at a point where it could survey the dwellings below, like a patrician parent hovering over its children. After that, there was a patch of bare grass, beyond which the remains of a dilapidated row of terraced cottages could be seen in the distance. At the lowest dip in the road stood the whitewashed pub, after which they crossed a small bridge, making their way up the next incline towards Hawthorne Cottage. She stopped the car outside her gate, observing the Land Rover parked up ahead of them. Then she spotted someone standing at her front door. As she watched, the woman moved to the front window, cupped her hands around her eyes, and peered through. Grace got slowly out of the car, wondering why she should be the one feeling uncomfortable at catching someone else snooping around her home. This woman looked totally out of place in an area where the dress code was mostly denim, flannel checks, and tweed. She wore baggy fisherman's trousers and a shapeless stripy sweater, teamed with a beanie in rainbow colours. As Grace closed the car door, the woman turned and with absolutely no embarrassment said, "Oh, hello. I thought this place looked occupied." She noted Grace's confusion and laughed. "Sorry, let me introduce myself. I'm Claire, Meredith's daughter." She pointed back the way Grace had just come, towards the big house sitting on the hillside. "Mum saw the car here, and I've been sent round to check it out. Make sure you're not a squatter. You must be Grace." Grace returned the friendly smile. "Yes, I am," she replied. "Pleased to meet you. I didn't know Meredith had a daughter. I'm looking forward to seeing her again, to say thank you. She's done a terrific job of minding the place." The woman came forward and held out a hand. As she got closer, Grace saw that Claire's eyebrow was pierced through with a small hoop, and her nose sported a ruby gem. One ear had two rings through it, whereas the other one had five, becoming gradually smaller as they ascended her ear. "Nice to meet you too," Claire said. "And Meredith hasn't got one daughter. There are four of us, for her sins. And she can't get rid of us either. As one moves out, another one moves back in for some reason or other. I'm the latest refugee. Mind you, Mum loves it. She wouldn't know what to do with herself in that big old house if one or another of us wasn't in need of a hand.
Her eyes flickered towards the car. Is that your daughter in there?
Yes.
Claire glanced through the window at the sleeping child.
Ah, she's lovely, Grace. You must be so proud.
She remained still for a moment, as though lost in thought, then bent down to retie the laces of one walking boot. As she straightened, she continued.
Anyway, I think Mum has decided to adopt you as one of us now that you're back. So she sent me here with an invitation to lunch tomorrow. Would you like to join us?
Grace hesitated for a moment, which Claire took as a sign that she needed encouragement.
Please come along, Grace. You'd be very welcome. Mum's had a bit of a rough time lately. I don't know if you heard, but our dad passed away a few months ago. It was unexpected. He had a massive stroke and never recovered and, well, you know.
Claire trailed off uneasily. Grace understood, as she had grown used to this in the last year. People no longer talked casually of disaster or loss in her presence, yet she was also set apart by Adam's unexplained disappearance. No one knew quite how to deal with that, including Grace herself. I'm so sorry, Claire, she replied. I didn't know about your dad. She remembered Meredith's husband. He had been in the search party for Adam last year. In particular, she recalled his sorrowful eyes, which had conveyed such a depth of compassion that it had reached her through the confused fog of that terrible night. Grace was unsure of what to say next. She often thought that after the last year, she should be able to tackle difficult subjects with ease. But if anything, it had made her hesitate even more. She was too aware of what harm a casual slip of the tongue or a careless remark could do to an injured spirit. She'd lost count of the times she'd fielded insensitive questions about Adam's disappearance from well-meaning family or friends. In the end, she smiled. I'd love to come for lunch. I was only uncertain because my sister will be here this weekend.
Oh, no problem, Claire replied. Bring her along too. Come about midday. We'll see you then.
And she walked away down the hill with a wave. As Grace watched her go, she felt the first spots of rain sting her face. Then she saw Claire move tight against the side of the lane as a small red hatchback swung into view, bouncing across the bridge. Claire glared after the car, and Grace grimaced. She could always trust her sister to make an entrance. Chapter 5. The next day, Grace woke up to a weak sunshine pushing its way in through the curtains. For once, the other side of the bed was not an empty hollow. Rather, it contained a person in a silk nightie with a pink eye mask and bright pink earplugs, snoring softly. Grace had laughed at Annabelle as she'd set about blocking the world out the night before. We're not next to the motorway here, you know. There's nothing out there.
I know, but I can't sleep without them now.
Sharing a bed reminded Grace of their childhood. The pillow fights, the pinching and tickling, the risque novels they had read in whispers by torchlight. The last time Annabelle had slept in Grace's bed had been a year ago, when Grace had woken to reality with a painful throb in her chest on the morning after Adam had disappeared. She jerked back to the present as she heard Millie stirring and went to get her. By the time she had made Millie's cereal, Annabelle was coming down the stairs. Grace looked around the kitchen doorway to see her sister standing by the window, bleary-eyed.
Morning,
Annabelle trilled.
I was completely disorientated when I woke up.
She glanced out of the window again.
It's so dismal, isn't it? I couldn't believe it when I was driving here yesterday. It's one long stretch of mud and dead bracken. I'm not sure this place even qualifies as a hamlet.